Welcome back to the Empath and the Narcissist podcast.
The mission of this podcast is to bring you education, inspiration, and empowerment through relatable conversations, empowering information, and self-care, self-healing practices.
So this is the funny part about my interview. Right after I interviewed Jivan Mathuru for the podcast, we were talking a little bit more and chatting about how that was a really pleasant experience. And he said it really fast, so I couldn't understand it in his British accent, but I heard the word Scoville. And I was like, I know that name. I'm pretty sure I know it. Wait a second. And then he's like, oh, yeah, she wrote the book, The Game of Life and How to Play It. And I was like, hold on. I literally pulled the book from my table that was sitting right next to my computer underneath my soundboard. And I was like, oh, you mean this? Oh, you mean Florence Scoville Shin? And he was like, oh my gosh, that's crazy. I'm like, yeah, I have the book that contains all of her books. It's The Works. And he was like, oh my gosh. He's like, that was such a message from like spirit. Like, I need to read that book tonight. It came to my head. It popped in there. You had it on your table. And then you just showed it to me. It was like the craziest moment. And we were both laughing and just really solidifying that our spirit guides and the universe, they put things in our head and inspire us. And then they confirm it through things just like that, like serendipitous moments where you're like, oh my gosh, now I have to figure out why the universe is wanting me to go back into that book. So he's like, I'm excited to read a little bit more of that book tonight. Cause he's like, it just popped in my head. And I was like, yes, that's how the head center works. I said, I don't know what your human design chart is. I don't know what, if you have an open or a defined head center, but I know I have a defined center. So that was crazy that, you know, I wasn't even thinking about the book, but the book was here and it was like just the energy went out and he received it. And maybe he has a defined center. I don't know. Maybe it was just the universe giving him a message that he needed to go back into that book. Oh, it was just such a really cool moment. So you guys, you just have to check out Jivan. And I hope you enjoy this episode. Jivan Mathuru is an author of the book Become a Person of Value and transformational coach from tragedy to triumph, and has recently acquired qualifications in life coaching, psychology, and counseling. He also is a member of Mensa. He loves philosophy and is a self-proclaimed stoic, and he is currently writing his second book. Welcome to the podcast, Jivan.
Thank you very much, Raven, for having me on. I'm looking forward to my conversation.
Yeah, I really am looking forward to hearing more about your book. What is in it, A Person of Value? I think that's important, especially for us empaths. I think we already feel like we're very valuable people, but more so like, we need to be reminded that we are valuable because a narcissist has beat us down and really put our self-esteem low, right?
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, just to sort of touch on the book, really, for a lot of people, as you said, they have maybe some low self-esteem issues, whether that's come from themselves or from others, whether that's teachers, parents, or, as you said, something more abusive. And actually, people are seeking income and assets, so they want to be, you know, an Amazon. They want to have, you know, millions and billions coming into their bank account each month. But they're looking at things in reverse. What they're not looking at is, can they provide value to someone that will maybe generate an income, or, you know, doesn't have to necessarily be income, but something tangible for someone else. So if we look at Amazon for a moment, actually they're so valuable because you can go online, can't you, Raven, type in a product that you want and it'll be with you tomorrow at a very reasonable price. And that's the value that they have actually generated that gives them that asset value, and obviously stock price and all of that sort of stuff. So really the book of Become a Person of Value is about you becoming valuable yourself, whether it's physically, whether it's spiritually, whether it's having a specific skill that you can hone in on to give you that sort of level of income moving forward. Is it setting goals? Is it motivating yourself? Is it understanding your own psychology? Is it communicating better? Is it being or having more gratitude for what you've already got? Because something I heard once, and it's quite interesting, is saying that someone is jealous of everything in your life. You know, you've got your own podcast, Raven. So someone who hasn't got a podcast is jealous of the fact that you've got a podcast. You know, I've got my own house, a car and a dog. You know, someone else might be jealous of the fact they want a dog. They want to be able to drive. They don't even drive. They don't even have a car. You know, they are still living with their parents. You know, they wish they had their own house. So you have to be very, very grateful for those things. And that puts you on a good vibrational state that, again, will then help you attract success. So really the book, Become a Person of Value, is 25-30 chapters split into those sort of areas, as I've said. So self-improvement, goals, mentality, affirmations, motivation. So all of those sort of things that are all aligned in a way that helps you to improve your own value, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's crucial to do your own self-development work to even be able to achieve goals, number one, to be able to heal from an abusive relationship, number two, and like all of it just intertwines. It's not something that you do like, this is first step one, this is step two. It's like a dance where you're constantly improving yourself so you can be emotionally free from the abuse. Then, you know, you can achieve your goals and maybe even make money off of that and figure out what your passion and purpose in life is. And that sounds really cool.
Exactly. And, you know, as you said there with abusive relationships, you know, relationships is a very broad subject, isn't it? You know, whether it's relationships with your parents, mother and father, whether it's relationships on a more romantic basis, whether it's relationships with your teachers or peers at school. And one of the things that, you know, as you've sort of alluded to there, is that there's a lot of noise out there and people are, you know, abused, whether it's physically or emotionally or a combination of both of them, and it really suppresses your own self-image, and then you feel worthless, and there's this negative spiral effect. That I'm actually reading a book at the moment by Lanny Bassum called With Winning in Mind, and what he talks about is your own self-image. And obviously let's say that you fail all your exams. One of your self-image that you're going to have of yourself is, I'm a failure, I fail exams. And when you move on to your next exam, you know, you're also going to have that self-image. So one of the things that we help, you know, as coaches, is to redesign and redevelop your self-image, because at the end of the day, your past is not a trajectory of your future. Yeah, just because you've been in, you know, you've had abuse in the past, whether it's self-abuse, which obviously can happen as well, or whether it's from other people, you know, it's all about setting your stand or your stall up now for future progress. And, you know, you can do that by writing down what you want to be, what you feel that you are, and, you know, how you want your mentality to look moving forward, and sort of live into that expectation. You know, coaching and counselling is sort of similar to an extent, but different, where counselling looks at your past experiences and why that happened and what you can learn from it. Coaching is actually saying, well, yeah, that has happened, let's understand it to an extent, but let's actually look forward and see how you could improve your relationships moving forward, how you can improve your own self-image, how can you increase your self-esteem, what activities can you do, etc. So yeah, it's a really interesting area of conversation, isn't it, Raven?
Yeah,
I think there's so much to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you were saying that, I had this image of, you know, like a basketball coach. They're always like, okay, forget the game we lost. Let's focus on the game now. And what can we do better to win this game? And I think is really cool that the coaching industry has expanded, because that's what we need in our mental life too. You don't just need it in sports. You need it in your mind to be able to grow strong and to accomplish what you want to accomplish.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, as you said there with the basketball coach example, well, I'm going to say two things. One is, everyone needs a coach. Tiger Woods, yeah, and Kobe Bryant, you know, they are the top of their game. So you might think, well, actually, why do they need a coach? Actually, you need someone sometimes externally to you, even if you are the best at that specific sport or within that industry. Sometimes you need someone else to look at things for you and help you to develop your own game. The second thing that you mentioned there is looking at the last game and the negative. We are hardwired to look at the negative. Yeah, when actually the positive is what we want to take from something. So instead of saying, well, actually, you know, I messed up here, and yes, it's good to try and understand that, but you want to focus on the positive situation. You know, there's always something positive to come from everything that happens to you. Some people have lost their job. you know, positive is that they probably hated their job in the first place and they can now find something they love. Mm-hmm. They might find a job nearer to home with better pay. You know, there's always positives. One of the examples I use is that, let's say your car breaks down on your drive. Now, most people will be like, oh, my car's broken down, it's going to cost me a few hundred dollars, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Actually, can you not look at that in a positive way and say, actually, my car broke down on my drive rather than 500 miles away from home when I was on my own in the rain, the cold, you know, heating wasn't working and it's taken me 5 hours to get the sort of delivery guy out, or not delivery guy, the breakdown guy out. Mm-hmm. So there's always positives that can come from anything. Even, you know, if you have been in abusive relationships before, you know, it was bad at the time, but you can actually grow from that now and be more resilient from that. So, you know, you have to turn things around into positive situations. Now, with positive versus negative, this is a really good thing I learned of late. So let's say that I tell you don't talk about or don't think about elephants. Mm. What's the first thing you think about?
Elephants, because you just elephants. Said it. I'm exactly. Like, I have to think about it. You just told me not to think about it.
Exactly. So when we tell our minds, oh, don't be depressed, don't be this, don't be that, you actually become more like that. So instead of saying, I don't know, I don't want to be fat, we need to say, I want to be athletic. I want to be able to run 5 miles, yeah. 10 miles. And that fat will actually reduce on the basis of having that positive base goal rather than negative base goal. Most people make that mistake. I want to stop smoking. I want to stop drinking. I want to lose fat. I don't want to be single. Why not say, I want to be in a relationship instead? It sort of means the same thing, but for your subconscious mind, it doesn't. You know, people always talk about what they don't want. I don't want to fail, my business to fail. I don't want to go bankrupt. I don't want to, I don't want to, I don't want to, I don't want to. And subconscious doesn't really resonate with that. So, you know, sometimes, you know, not that it's always people's fault, but if you have had, you know, bad relationships with yourself or others, try and understand, it's not saying that it is something you've done, but, you know, what can you learn from that? Can you approach things differently in future? Can you keep yourselves away from those type of people and learn very early on what those types of people are like in terms of red flags? Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure you're the same. You know, certain things are red flags that you will sort of steer clear from. You know, you might give someone a second chance, a chance, but, you know, three strikes and you're out, I think the phrase is. So, you know, it's all about protecting yourself. You are your own best asset. And, you know, if you can't look after yourself and have your own best interests at heart, then, you know, it's going to be very difficult for you, isn't it, Raven?
I love that. Yes, I would 100% agree. And I think the topic between positivity and negativity, I just want to input, like, there can be an overly positivity where it's toxic. Like, you stick your head in the sand and you don't look at those things. And you, like you said, you need to have a bit of counseling and evaluate it to be able to be prepared. Like you say, you're a self-proclaimed stoic. That's exactly a stoicism philosophy, is you need to think about the worst case scenario, plan for it, and then work towards that not happening, right? Being prepared, and you're not focusing on it like, oh my gosh, it's going to happen. It's like, okay, this could happen. I'm going to be prepared. Like, know your red flags, go into it very like neutral versus rose colored glasses. And yeah. Continue to work on yourself. And like, so when it does come, because life isn't perfect, you'll be prepared and it won't be so tragic.
Exactly. And, you know, as you said, it's the phrase, the age old phrase is prepare for the worst and expect the best, isn't it? Yeah. Mm. And really the positivity point that I was trying to allude to was not that, as you've put there, you know, have rose spectacles on, everything's bright and rosy, even if he gets, you know, stabbed in the leg, you know, it's all great. My point was that there is something, you can find something positive in everything, even if it's, you know, a bad thing.
Yeah.
And it's really, really, really difficult to actually train your mind to find something positive from something that can happen that's so bad. And that's something that is really helpful in your life, to find, oh, this is a positive, great, let's work with that then and develop that moving forward. Because as we've said, you know, something, when you focus on the negative, more negative things tend to happen for some strange reason.
Oh, the other thing that popped in my head when you were saying that is that what you think, like, literally you create your reality. So you're always thinking like, I don't want to do this. Like you said, in your subconscious, it's always like, well, she keeps or he keeps saying this. So you're literally creating what you don't want to create because you're focusing on what you don't want versus focusing on like switching the narrative, focusing on the ideal, focusing on what you do want to do, focusing on what you're going to do to shift it. Yeah.
I think parents are a really big one for this. Don't say to the kids, you know, don't come back late. Mm-hmm. You know, don't smoke. Don't hang around with that person. Mm-hmm. Instead, be more positive. Come home early instead of don't be late.
Right.
Make friends with good people, not don't, you know, hang around with it. I think parents do have, and not all parents, you know, I'm not putting every parent in the same, you know, tarring with the same brush.
Right.
But it's some of the programming that a lot of people get. And, you know, you spoke earlier about was those toxic relationships. And that's sometimes why, you know, from parents treating their kids in such a way, that toxic relationship can develop because they don't understand each other. You know, the language that they're using is not correct. You know, they're saying to their kids, oh, you're messy. They will live into that. You know, when you tell someone they're messy, they actually become messier. If you say, oh, thanks very much for cleaning your room, really great job.
Mm-hmm.
They will actually behave more like that as you go on.
Yeah.
So it's a really, language is really interesting, you know, how you speak to yourself and how you speak to others is a really good reflection on you as a person. You know, if you're doing a marathon and you're speaking to yourself, oh, this is really tough, I'm dying out here, right. Instead of saying, you know, every step is making me stronger, etc. Which one of those guys out of those two is going to do better on the marathon? You know, probably the second. And the only difference is how he's talking to himself or how she's talking to herself. So massively important.
Yeah. And this is so important in that healing process. Like, let's say you're, you know, because healing from a narcissist or any emotional abusive relationship, either your parents, romantic, a friend, it's a mourning process. So some of you listening may be in this state of anger, like you're really pissed off that this happened. And what I want you to get from this message from Jivan is that for you to have a breakthrough and move past that state is to focus on, okay, what are the lessons I've learned? What are the good things that were from that? And then glean that so you can shift out of the hate and the I'm not going to ever forgive them, because forgiveness is key to actually break through and move forward. Do you agree?
Yeah, 100%. I think you've got to forgive those around you and yourself. The Stoic phrase, I think it's Stoic, well, it's a philosophical phrase anyway,
mm-hmm.
is something along the lines of, the say someone's robbing you in the street, yeah? So when you smile at a robber, you take something from them.
Mm.
So, you know, because they would expect you to be angry and resentful and say, oh, you know, oh, give me that phone. If you smile at them, it takes something from them out of their soul to an extent. And that's why I'm saying sometimes you know if you've been through this bad relationship with the narcissist as you've alluded to, sometimes it's just a smile and say, oh, you know what, thanks for everything that you've done for me. And they will be like, what, but I've been, you know, punching you and calling you names and stuff, and they can't understand it.
Yeah.
And then actually it affects them more than it does you, and you're actually free saying, instead of me having the grudge and going to a negative state, I can just say thank you for everything, and it will actually affect them more in the long term than it will do you. Yeah. Really,
and
good
then, and
that's
why
I love velocity.
Yeah, I was gonna say, and then walk away, yeah. And don't listen to their ego spiraling out of control, like, what did she or he just say? And then don't listen to the response, because it'll drive you crazy, because they're going
exactly.
crazy.
Exactly. Yeah. They will go crazy because they haven't got the clarity there.
Yeah.
It's such a strange thing. And that's why I feel that philosophy is such a good thing to try and read and understand, because it really gives you a new angle on stuff.
Yeah.
You know, another one that from philosophy is, don't hold on to a boiling pot just because of how long it took you to boil. So, you know, you might have been in this relationship and it's boiling and it's boiling and boiling. You don't need to hold on to the kettle, you know, just because it's taken you 10 years to develop this relationship. And you think, oh, you know, I've put so much investment into this, and, you know, you're holding on to that boiling kettle, which is the relationship. Sometimes you just got to let go, you know, because you've got to damage limitations rather than say, oh, I need to turn this into a positive. Sometimes, you know, you have to give up, and, you know, everyone says don't give up and stuff. Sometimes that is the best play, is to say, look, this isn't working. Go our separate ways. As we said, say thank you for the, you know, the bad relationship. And again, that's going to work in your favour. But yeah, I mean, it's just doing the right things at the right time. Some things, you know, you have to work out, of course, but sometimes it's just not going to work. You know, you're too different. You've grown apart. You know, it can happen. It especially happens with relationships that happen too young.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that myself, where, you know, people have gone out since they're 16 and they've stayed together till they're 30 and they've not really explored and experienced things outside of each other. And they realise, you know, 10, 15 years down the road, we're actually very, very different. You know, intelligence level's different. Interests are different. You know, I'm family orientated and like doing outdoorsy stuff. You like to go out with the girls or with the boys and go drinking every night.
Yeah,
it's just too different. So, you know, sometimes it is a case of knocking it on the head and starting over again. And again, let's look at the positives from that. You're going to be upset at the time, you know, been with them for 15 years and et cetera, et cetera. The positive is you get a brand new, fresh start. Is that not exciting enough? Having a fresh start, I mean, for everyone, excitement, you know.
It's exciting. It could be scary.
Overcomes you. Yeah, but, well.
But they've taught you something about yourself. You know, it's almost like, thanks for the ride these last 15 years, but you guys are on two totally different paths. So thank you and see you later.
Yeah, exactly. As you said there, you know, you can look at things objectively once you've obviously gone through the morning stage, let's call it.
Yeah.
You could look at, okay, what did I enjoy about that relationship? Make a list. You know, you liked going out to eat once a week, or, you know, you enjoyed the humor side, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Stuff you didn't like, you know, he didn't do the dishes, let's say, for as an example, or, you know, she was doing this, or, and you can make a list and say, actually, this is the sort of person I'm looking for. And you can, you know, actually mentally and physically, you know, write that down. I'm looking for a person who's this type of person, etc. And you can actually reverse engineer it. And I know that, you know, let's not make this into a science, but if you want someone who enjoys rock climbing, let's say, for example, why not go to rock climbing clubs? That's going to give you a 100% more chance of meeting someone who likes those sorts of activities and doesn't. And one of the things that, you know, I speak to clients about is that they say, I'm looking for a relationship and I want someone who's got the same interests as me. Talk about their interests and say, well, do you actually do anything about your interests? And I say, no. I said, well, why not go to, you know, your martial arts classes and your dancing classes, or, and just live your life as you would normally. You know, you don't need someone else to complete you.
Mm-hmm.
You just want someone to find someone that is going to compliment you. And that's, for me as well, one of the bad things that can happen is that some people really need someone to complete them.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it ends, it really breaks them. You need to be independent, but also interdependent to an extent, not dependent on the other person, which, you know, you can see happen. And that's what leaves people broken afterwards.
The codependency.
So, yeah.
I 100% agree with that. And you really can't find or attract your ideal partner if you're not operating at that high frequency. You're not investing in yourself. Like you said, like, what do you love to do? Why are you sitting at home and not doing them? Just go out and do them, because it fills your cup up. Who cares if it, you know, if it's for someone else? It's not. You have your own life. You're unique. You're not linked to any other human being. You just get to enjoy partnership with someone else.
Well, this is it. You know, as you said, you know, you're not searching for something. As with anything, you know, you have to attract stuff. You know, if you, you know, jobs, for example, yes, you search for jobs, but you're actually attracting that position based on your experience, you know, your age and what you've done so far. You're attracting that position because at the end of the day, I could search for rocket scientist jobs. I'm never going to get them. I can search as much as I want, but I don't, you know, I'm not attracted to that job and vice versa because of the skill set that I've got. Much like that, you know, people go out and search for relationships and search for jobs and income and stuff. Just try and build the value. If you work on yourself and become, you know, better looking physically, you know, you exercise and you work hard on your job and you, you know, bring in more income, you get a better house and better car, and you increase your level from 3 out of 10 to 7 out of 10, the caliber of the opposite or same sex, again, depending on who we're talking about, that you will attract is going to be much increased. And then if you add into the equation going to those activities, you know, I do judo, for example, and I like to go hiking and walking, walk the dog. And, you know, I make sure that I could keep on top of those. I go to the gym and all those sorts of things. And, you know, you get to meet people in those places. And as you said, you know, sitting on your couch and on Tinder swiping left and right. I mean, I'm not being funny, but that's no real, I mean, some people are lucky, don't get me wrong, but the likelihood of that turning into something long-term is probably pretty slim.
Yeah, the frequency matches the frequency. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah,
I'm a strong believer in that.
This whole time we've been talking about this, such amazing topics, but I did want to ask you, how did you get into coaching and writing your book? What's your story?
Okay, so I'll take you sort of, I'll do a very brief summary, but cover off the key points. So at school, I was pretty smart, you know, top of the class, doing sort of exams early, like 3 years early. But as you progress through life, what you realize is it's not just down to ability. Other things come into play to ensure success. So I started to study, you know, success, you know, discipline and setting goals and motivating yourself and all those sorts of things to help to work in parallel with my ability, because I've seen people who maybe weren't as smart as I was actually do better than I'm doing. Does that make sense? So for me, what I then did was work through that sort of personal development material and think, actually, you know, I can help others to improve themselves as well. And actually that's where that came from. Recently I got into Mensa. Again, I'm 32 years of age. I'll probably say over in any, you know how it is as well with men versus women. You know, women tend to mature a lot earlier than men. And for me, it was a case of not maturing until I was probably 23, 24. So I decided to go for the Mensa test and obviously got in. So in the top 2% IQ wise, but it's really just understanding that for me as well, I use things on myself and friends and other people to increase their own stock price. So that's why I got into it, really. And I really enjoy helping people. You know, one of the things that I think would be good for the listeners, and even if you've not done it yourself, right, to do a personality test on maybe the Myers-Briggs. It just gives you a bit of an insight into what your
We talk a lot about human design here. So it's more of a self-development tool, but it helps you like with your type versus there's personality traits you learn, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So traits. So, you know, some things you're going to be more like than other people. So introversion versus extroversion. Yes, you can become more extroverted. Yes, you can become more introverted, but it's generally something that is built in to an extent. So yeah, you know, you can obviously make yourself more, you know, introvert does not mean you're socially inept as people tend to think. It just means you prefer to spend more time alone. And on the other side, extroverts doesn't mean you're, you know, amazing socially. I know a lot of extroverts that are extrovert that are really bad socially. You know, they can't pick up on social cues and stuff like that. So as you said, it's all about developing. Exactly. It's all about developing yourself. So what is good to look at is your personality traits, seeing where your starting point is, seeing where you want to be and how you can maybe adjust it slightly to say, okay, well, because of the job I do, maybe am I in the wrong job? You know, am I doing something that's more suited to extroverts, whereas I'm introvert?
Yeah.
Am I doing something where I'm agreeable, but doing a job that's very disagreeable? So I think there is some overlap between personal development and also what you are inherently. So for example, I could train every day for 200 years to become a sprinter. It's just not going to happen. I haven't got the physique for it. You know, sometimes, you know, you are dealt certain cards. You need to work out what cards they are, which is why personality tests and self introspection come in, and then how you can best use those cards to the best of their abilities. And that's where coaching comes in, really. You know, not everyone is 7 foot tall and can play basketball. For those that are, again, they've got separate coaches that help them to get the most out of themselves. For other people, it's maybe this slightly different path. So that's, you know, why coaching is quite important.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And like I said, we talk a lot about the human design around here as a tool first to heal and to have self-discovery, because there's so many elements of it like you had said about all the different personality tests, but this dives deeper into actually sharing with you what is your life's purpose. So it actually helps you hone in, like you have these energies innately in you. So now do something, you know, whatever makes you passionate, lights you up around this area. And it typically lines up what their incarnation cross, which is your life's purpose, lines up with what they're already passionate about. So I would say, look, if you don't even pull any personality test or anything, just like look at what really lights you up and look at your passions.
100%. And this is something I have spoken to or about on other podcasts. And, you know, a lot of the time people go into an industry for the wrong reasons. Oh, I want to make loads of money. And I saw someone else that have done that. Great. But are you good at that thing? You know, if you look at Roger Federer, for example, tennis player, when he was very young, and he was very lucky to work this out, he knew he was good at tennis. So he's put all his eggs in that basket and developed his tennis skills. You need to work out what you're good at. And as you said, what makes you tick and something you love to do. It's got to be a case of you've got to love to do it and you've got to be good at it. It's got to be a tie up. You know, as I said, I enjoy sprinting, let's say, but it doesn't mean that I can become a sprinter, because, you know, being good at something and that interest has to sort of marry up. So that's the first thing. Second, again, we'll go back to some philosophy here. It says that, you know, people ask what the meaning of life is. It's actually you that's asked what life means to you. So that's something really to consider in order to, you know, develop, as you said, your life meaning, which then develops your purpose. And then you can say, well, actually, how can I best use my skill set to achieve that purpose? And for me, you know, talking about the coaching, is to help improve and develop people into the best versions they can be. You know, a tree, when you plant a seed, it grows to the biggest version of itself. An animal, they will grow to the best of their ability. Humans don't tend to do that. We smoke, we drink, we, you know, self-sabotage massively, which is obviously one of the crucial things that people are trying to get away from. And once we get rid of the, you know, fear of failure, fear of success, you know, self-sabotage, etc., get rid of all of those bits, we can then, you know, turn from a caterpillar into a butterfly and try and achieve our best.
I love that. I love that you pointed out too, humans are the only unique ones that have a fear, which brings me to like the spleen center and all the different gates. The spleen center is the oldest center in the human design. It relates to survival, like animals, a tree, you know, and things like that. But the different energies inside a human, we have the concept of abstraction. We have the concept of like deeper thinking, which can lead to the fears that any other living, you know, animal doesn't have. They're not afraid of failure. They're just, you know, afraid of dying. That's pretty much it. So they do everything not to die. Where we have all these different abstract fears that you have to mentally strengthen and overcome and push through. Yeah.
So what's your view, just because you mentioned, you sort of alluded to it there, what's your sort of views on chakras?
The chakra system's included in the human design. I love the chakras. I love to cleanse them with meditations and healing. I think they're directly connected to, you know, like the head and the center eye chakra is directly connected to hearing messages and receiving from source, and the heart is, you know, related to healing, and the root especially is related to making sure we're grounded into the earth. So we're not just up in the air, like just feeling overwhelmed by our fears. Yeah. How about you?
Yeah. I mean, just because of something you said there with the spleen and stuff, it just sort of triggered the chakra thing in my mind. And that it was actually something that was written in the book Under Spirituality, you know, understanding how chakras work and where yours is potentially blocked and how to sort of release that blocked chakra, for example. But yeah, as you said, with the main head chakra, is that, you know, we are all part of the same universe, same source, same God, you know, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, when you get ideas, we're just a receiving system. That's coming directly to us. And as you said, if you meditate and you can clear your ability to receive messages, then, you know, you will get better insights and you will, you know, develop yourself. So it's not a post box. If you've got a post box that's not been emptied in 2 weeks, when you sign stuff letters in, it's very difficult to actually get the letter in, first of all. And secondly, how do you read all of those letters all at once? Sometimes you need to empty the letterbox out, clear everything, give it a nice clean. And then when, you know, you get those letters and entries come in, you can just open and read them straight away. So I think, you know, everyone should be looking to meditate, really, to help just get more within yourself. You know, if there's no enemy within, there's no enemy without, I think one of the phrases is. So.
I love that. Yeah. I love the analogy. I've never heard meditation, you know, and the analogy between like checking your box, your mailbox or your inbox. You know, like with us having overflowing amounts of spam in our email boxes, like exactly. We don't want our brains to be like that. So a daily meditation, just a few minutes, helps you just delete some of the things, you know, some spam in your inbox, and journaling too. So maybe you need to journal after you meditate to clear all that out. I love that.
Yeah. So if you don't plant, weeds grow by default. And that's that spam that you've talked about that travels through the mind.
Yeah.
Journaling wise, I recommend two types of journal. One is, you know, your goals, your affirmations, and what you're, you know, grateful for. The second, which is something that Marcus Aurelius talks very religiously about, for want of a better word, yeah. Is to,
he's a Stoic, for the listeners, by the way. A lot of people aren't familiar with Stoicism, so I love that we're talking about this. Go ahead.
Yeah, Stoicism, just for your listeners, it's sort of a branch of philosophy that is really good in terms of, it gives you some real clarity on yourself and how life operates. A lot of the time, you know, you are programmed by TV programs and newspapers and all those sorts of things. I just feel that philosophy, the way that the phrases are, so, you know, you all have seen, you know, phrases go around on Instagram. And, you know, you probably like them and think, oh, that phrase actually makes a lot of sense. A lot of those have come from philosophy and Stoicism. So for me, I listen to Stoicism or read some of the phrases every day, because it helps keep me grounded and helps to, you know, calm and relax my mind, really.
Yeah.
As much as anything else. So yeah.
So, but yeah, what did he say about journaling? Yeah, sorry.
He basically said that at night time you should sit down, not have your, didn't say anything about phones, because obviously there wasn't any phones back then, but if you sort of interpret the way you said it, is to clear yourself of all distractions, really sit down and talk about your thoughts, or write down what your thoughts are. How do you think today went? You know, what sort of skills do you think you developed today? And like a bit like a diary in essence, and writing down maybe some ideas that you've got. Ask yourself some questions at night time. Oh, you know, how could I grow my business by 10% over the next 6 months? Okay, great, let's write that question down. You'll be very surprised as to how much your subconscious works at night time. So if you're asking yourself these deep questions and trying to understand, you know, the good things and bad things about yourself just before you go to bed, when you get up in the morning, some of those questions will already be answered. And for those that aren't answered, it might take a month, 2 months, 3 months, and ping, you know, you'll get the answer into your mind. So he says, you know, do that at night time in the morning, recap what you wrote in the journal the night before, and then do the same again the next day. And he says for him it was a real way to harness his own mind. And I think it was Jim Rohn that said, don't use your head as a filing cabinet. You know, as good as, you know, you are, you know, retaining thoughts, you need a pen and paper. You absolutely need a pen and paper. I mean, as I said, I write down my goals and affirmations and what I'm grateful for every day. Because your hand and your brain and a piece of paper and a pen has such a great connection that you can't just have from, you know, speaking to yourself. I mean, if I gave you a very complex maths problem or puzzle to solve, you're going to say, oh, can I have a pen and paper, please? Because it's very difficult. I mean, there are some very smart people out there who have managed to have total control of their own mind and could probably use it as a pen and paper, but for most people they can't. So they need something where it's visual there and they can actually work through things and compartmentalize and structure things. So if you need that for something complex like a puzzle, why not use it for something complex like your own mind, your own your own intellect, your own mentality and all those sorts of things. So yeah, definitely a pen and paper for me is well worth the investment.
I love that idea of writing it down at night. Like, and I was just talking to somebody who was really struggling with like being able to fall asleep. And this person, particularly in the human design, is a projector, which is already difficult because they're in their sacral center, which is related to the sacral chakra, is that they're amplifying like everybody's energy around them. And for them, you know, I have a daughter who has it. So it's really important. I get her into her bed an hour before I know she needs to fall asleep. So all projectors, you guys need to be like journaling and laying and reclining in your bed for an hour before you're ready to fall asleep, because you need that time to clear out that energy first in your sacral. And I'm sure for all of us generators, manifesting generators, in your head, you need to clear all that out. And that pushes down into the throat as the manifesting center. So writing is the same thing as speaking, because you're getting it out of your body. And I think that's really powerful. I love that advice, Siobhan.
Yeah, 100%. As you said there, you know, sometimes just writing it down has given you some clarity to say, oh, you know, that's now being dealt with. Even though it's exactly the same, it feels like you've got it off your chest and down on paper, as it were. I mean, I'm a bit like that in terms of, let's say I'm doing some emails or I'm working on something and something pops into my head, like an idea or something I need to do, or I need to put the washing out. Let's just use that as an example. I have to actually write it down on my to-do list, because then I can go back to focusing on what I was just doing. If I don't, I'm like, oh, washing needs to go out, or dishes need to be done. Exactly. So I have to write it down or email myself. I do this a lot as well. I email myself. So let's say I'm out walking the dog or something, and I think, oh, damn, I've not sent that email to the client. I will email myself, email to client, Mr. Smith.
Right.
And then I can relax, because I'm like, okay, I know that when I go back to, you know, the Hansel and Gretel story of leaving breadcrumbs, when I go back to home and get on the laptop, that'll be there. But I've already dealt with the batting the ball from that side to receive the ball at this end. Whereas if I hadn't done that, I'd be stressed out for the whole walk, thinking I need to remember to do this, I need to remember to do that.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely for me, writing stuff down or emailing myself or whatever it's going to be is massively important. And just on that, actually, and my second book that we talked about is actually going to be something along the lines of journaling. So it's going to be a question a day to ask yourself. So where do you want to be in 5 years' time, let's say, as an example question? Mm-hmm. And it'll talk about, you know, ways that you can help design 5 years and stuff like that. Then it will give you a few pieces of blank paper to help you design your next 5 years.
That's cool.
Next day there'll be another question, you know, based on my personality type or what I enjoy, as you said, what would I do every day if it wasn't about the money? Okay, well, if you could do that every day and you're good at it, why not do that as a full-time job? Maybe transition from what you do. So it's going to be a journal question a day with some guidance to an extent, with some philosophical quotes or just general help really with those questions. And it's your own personal book. So obviously the first book, you know, is doing well and happy about, but I'm more excited about the second book, because it's every person's version is going to be different, because they're writing down their own life story really and planning for the future. So yeah, really excited with that one. Hopefully it'll be out later on in the year, October, November, December time.
That sounds amazing. Yeah, so it's going to be every day, so like 365 journal prompts.
Yeah, so I'm going to do 366, because, you know, if it's a leap year, 1 year, then, you know, at least you've got got the extra day. So yeah, I mean, I've written all the questions down, and I've sort of so just in terms of where my progress is, and I've bullet pointed, you know, how I'm going to talk about the sort of guidance or questions within that. So let's use that question of where do you want to be in 5 years' time. That's such a broad question. We need to maybe look at sub questions to help you actually answer that full question. Do you want to be married or single? Do you want to have kids? Do you want to have, you know, pets? What sort of career do you want to be in? What level of income do you need, etc.? And you need to build that 5-year picture to then see where you are now in relation to that. It's not, oh, in 5 years' time, I want to be in a beach in, you know, in Australia. That's not really what the point of that question would be. It's much more detailed than that.
Like, what kind of vacation do you want? Which also would relate to how much money do you need to make to get the vacation? Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah, it's a case of reverse engineering. So as we said, in 5 years' time, if you want to be living in New York with $100,000 coming in a month, let's just make this very, very, a very ambitious goal. You want to have a 10 out of 10 boyfriend or girlfriend. You want to be able to run marathon in I don't know, 2-3 hours, et cetera, et cetera. How are you going to get there? What does year four need to be like? What does year three need to be like? What's year two? What's year one? What daily habits do you need to project that forward into 5 years? If it's a business goal, 5 years, I want to be turning over £1 million a year. What does that look like per month? What does my current earnings per month look like? Where does that discrepancy leave? How do I need to grow? How many employees do I need? So it starts to, you see how it triggers multiple questions. Yeah. And whether you do this in the morning, whether you do it in the evening, I think it's going to be really, you know, it's for me as well as for those who buy the book. You know, it's for my own personal development as well. You know, if I was to answer this book myself, it would help me, you know, in 5 years, 4 years, 3 years time. So yeah, those questions, you know, I'm really excited to once it is completed. But as I said, you know, everyone's book's going to be different, and that's the exciting part, really.
Yeah, that's a great project. I love that. It reminds me of what Ryan Holiday has out. Have you read any of Ryan Holiday's books?
I've not, unfortunately.
Oh, no. You would love it. He's a proclaimed Stoic, and he talks about Stoicism every day. Has so many books. Tim Ferriss is his mentor. Tim Ferriss is his mentor.
Oh, Tim, I know Tim Ferriss. Yeah. Yeah.
So he did a book, 365 Days of Stoicism.
And oh, yeah, I know that book. Yeah, I didn't know it was, that's Ryan Holiday, is it?
That's Ryan Holiday, yeah.
Oh, okay. So, yes, 366 and, Stoic yeah, quotations a day or something.
Yes, exactly. And I was actually just working on a project that's just as similar to yours, but for, like, healing and empowerment and narcissism. Like, just put on a little empowerment thing and then leave a journal thing. I think that's amazing how maybe the planets are all aligning us to be like, people, you need to journal. So we'll create you a prompt and a journal book.
100%. And, you know, as we talked about, you know, you're a receiving set for the universe. These ideas are all out there, and it's what people do about them. How many times have you heard, oh, I had the same idea? And, you know, a prime example is, you know, Uber and Uber Eats and all these delivery companies that now deliver like McDonald's and KFC. And
yeah,
we were talking about this like 15 years ago, as friends, were like, oh, wouldn't it be great if like KFC and Subway and McDonald's delivered? We should set up a business. But obviously it's one of those where you just say something and don't really do anything with it. Right. And obviously we're quite young at the time, so you know, the likelihood of that happening is very small. But then someone else has a similar idea and have actually done something with it. So, you know, it's not always what happens to you, it's how you view things and how you do things that makes a difference. So, you know, ideas can come and go, but are you actually acting on those ideas? And if so, how are you acting on those ideas? You know, Mr. Smith and Mrs. Jones are not the same beasts. You know, Mr. Jones might be working 20 hours a day religiously on this project. Mrs. Jones might not be, or vice versa. So, you know, you're in competition with yourself as well as everyone else to an extent. But you should focus on competing with yourself first, rather than with anyone else.
Yeah, and I think it's all about the right timing too. You know, the right energy of the right person and the right timing, like, links everything up. You know, when you plant seeds, when you're gardening, not every single seed grows into something. So it's really a combination of that and making sure your vibration is high and you're doing what your life's purpose is and what you truly are lit up about. And then the little breadcrumbs will show you the way and your success will come to you in your own unique way.
Yeah, absolutely. On just on the seeds thing that you said, which I think is absolutely spot on. Not every seed you plant is going to turn to something. Mm-hmm. And I really wish more people understood that. Because, you know, they start a business and it might be the first seed of those seeds they're going to plant in their lifetime. The first one fails and they decide not to plant another seed. And they don't decide not to plant another seed, another seed, another seed. Actually, what you need to understand is my first three seeds might be the duds. And after that, the next five seeds might be the ones that are bearing, you know, huge amounts of fruit. And, you know, maybe I learned something from the first two seeds. Maybe I didn't water them enough. Maybe I didn't plant the seed deep enough and put the compost on and all that sort of stuff. So for me, you know, everyone should be seeking failure, not averting from it. Failure is first attempt in learning as a sort of anagram, to an extent. And, you know, if you look at any businessman, their first business didn't always succeed. I mean, some did, of course, But for others, it's a case of, you know, what did I learn? How can I change things moving forward? How have I developed as a person? So Mike Tyson, let's use Mike Tyson as an example, not a businessman per se, but he went bankrupt, didn't he, at some point? But it didn't really matter because he is the value. You know, his experience with boxing, you know, his life experience, his actually ability to maybe teach some people boxing, that won't go away. So long as you increase your value inherently, you can make mistakes along the way. Whereas if you've just got assets, you know, so if people inherit loads of money or whatever, they can go bankrupt and that's it, they're done, because they haven't increased their value. If you're someone who is primarily based on value, absolutely great. You know, you probably will never have long-term issues. You might have short-term issues, as we've talked about. Peter Jones as well is another one. He, on Dragon's Den, you have something similar in the States, don't you? I think Dragon's Den and Shark's Tank.
Oh, Shark's Tank, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like that in the UK. And Peter Jones is one of the dragons on there, or the investors, for another phrase. It means synonym, basically.
Right.
And he made 200 million and lost it all. Every penny. And then he made back 250 million again. Because what they couldn't take away from him is his business acumen, the contacts he's made, etc. His ability to make deals, negotiate, etc. You know, work those long hours. You can't take that away from him, even if you take away what he's built up. So he started again and did the same thing for a second time. So what we need to understand is that, as you said, and we've gone a little bit off tangent, I suppose, but don't worry about your first seed. You've got to keep planting the seed over and over again. And, you know, I think one of the phrases as well is, you know, throw shit at the wall and hoping it sticks. You know, sometimes that's just the case. You've got to throw shit at the wall a few times, and sometimes it will stick, sometimes it won't. So just keep plugging away and look for the positive.
Yeah. And that goes full circle with what we first talked about, was the positive, not the actual effective positive mindset to eradicate the negative versus the toxic positivity. I love that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much for being here, you guys. Everything, the way that you can connect with Jivon is, all the links are in the show notes here. Just swipe the picture of the podcast and swipe up and it's in the show notes. It's just been a pleasure having you here. It's been fun bantering and going back and forth about stoicism and quotes and concepts. I love it. Thank you.
Thanks, Raven. I think you've asked some really good questions and you've got a really good energy about you as well. And you seem like you're on the right path of sort of enlightenment and having that sort of positive energy and stuff. So yeah, keep with it. And hopefully we'll cross paths again and maybe do another podcast at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. And we'll keep an eye out for your new book coming out. That's going to be amazing.
Thanks, Raven. Yeah. All the best.
Absolutely. You too.
Cheers.
If you enjoyed this podcast, continue to come back. I share these updates of the cosmic weather every Sunday. Rate and review this podcast so others can hear this amazing information from the cosmos as well. And I enjoy to see you, any feedback that you have. Remember, the Podchaser review helps donate money to Ukraine. And take a screenshot of this podcast. Also, tag me at Raven Scott Show. And thank you so much. Can't wait to connect with you. We're broken, it's tragic. We're not all elastic, but maybe there's magic. Believe you could have it. And I know of sadness, the anxious and panic.